Okay, how weird does it feel to be called someone's fiancé? The first time you hear it, you do a double take. Your heart kind of flutters. And before you know it, you go from let's just enjoy the moment to we're planning a fall wedding. That's where Zola comes in. Zola has everything you need to plan your wedding in one place and have fun along the way. From free planning tools like a budget tracker and website to a venue and vendor discovery tool that matches you with your dream team. Everything on Zola is designed to make your wedding journey as easy as possible, and with invites that can be completely customized and a wedding registry packed with gifts you actually want. Zola takes you from save our date to thanks so much without breaking a sweat. From getting engaged to getting married, Zola has everything you need to plan your wedding in one place. Start planning at Zola.com. That's Zola.com.
Oh my God, you guys.
Welcome
to If These Ovaries Could Talk. Who are you?
I'm Jamie.
Oh my God, and I'm Robin.
Yes, and we are your co-hosts, as always.
Oh.
It's been real fun. It's been real fun.
Wait, that sounds like a breakup. It's been real fun.
We're here. Well, we're not going anywhere, but we're having a really good time with you guys.
Cut to next week when all of a sudden there's a new host. It's like, I'm Jamie and I'm Jennifer. It's been real fun, Robin.
I wanted to talk to you about something, Robin.
Isn't that how it always starts? Okay, guys, guess what? We are not in our normal recording studio.
We're off campus.
We took a road trip.
We did.
We're not even going to talk about how I could not stay focused on the Waze directions.
It was a mess. It was a mess, but we made it here in one piece.
And early, because I am my father's daughter, mm-hmm. and I made us leave really super early.
Mm-hmm. And I supported that decision.
She sure did. By going, yeah, I guess I'll be out front by then. All right, listen, let's get to it. Today's episode is so mind-blowingly amazing.
Exciting.
We finished each other's sandwiches. That's what I was going to say.
We can't even contain ourselves. It's really exciting.
Okay, today we have with us Zach Walls. I mean, you might remember him. He went viral when he spoke to the Iowa House of Representatives because there was an issue with gay marriage and he wanted to speak out.
They were
in
having
support.
A hearing.
Yeah, exactly. And he wanted to speak out on behalf of his two moms.
It's a beautiful speech. If you haven't watched it, you should watch it. I think
yeah,
it's on
watch
YouTube.
That clip for sure.
And you can read it in his book, which I just read, which is a great book.
Mm-hmm.
It's called My Two Moms by Zach Walls.
And Zach is also here today because he is running for Iowa State Senate.
Big news. I mean, big deal.
This is a pretty big deal for us, Jamie.
It really is. I'm so excited. And I'm nervous, too, because
I'm like too dumb
really
to be nervous.
Smart.
All right, let's bring him in here. Welcome, Zach Walls.
Hi, Zach.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I want to just say before we get into anything.
We have to talk about this.
I mean,
for sure.
He's a tall drink of water.
Sure
ladies
is.
Gentlemen.
My goodness.
It's true.
I did not expect that.
Most people don't. You can't tell on the internet.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
No.
Yeah, well, you know, especially in the video that many people have seen, or most people kind of how they get to know me, the angle of the camera, you can't tell based on who's standing behind me, you know, my relative height. So people meet me in person and they tend to be surprised.
I love it. I feel like you can always tell that I'm short no matter what, so.
Well, so, I mean, I saw you walk in, but I was sitting at that point, so I actually we'll have to do a side-by-side selfie.
Oh, I think I'm as tall as you sitting when I'm standing. I think it's pretty close, so. We'll have to take some pictures later. We'll put them up
we'll
on
some
our
social
Instagram.
Media. So we want to start with you where we start with everyone, which is the elevator pitch about you and your family.
Yeah, well, sure. I mean, so the short version is my mom, Terry, my biological mom, decided in the late 1980s that she wanted to have some kids. She was a single lesbian woman living in central Wisconsin practicing medicine in a town of about 20,000 people. And not easy to get pregnant if you're in that position. It took her some time. She found a cryobank in the Fairfax, Washington, D.C. area. She found a fertility clinic in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. I was born in 1991. My younger sister, Zeb, was born in 1994. She and I have the same donor and same biological mother, so we are full biological siblings. And if she was sitting right here, you can see the similarity
is
very strong. And then in 1995, my mom, Terry, met acute nurse named Jackie, who
was
finishing up her master's in nursing. Nurse Jackie, which we actually, I've never seen even a single episode.
But is she, but, so nurse, good. Is she like Nurse Jackie? I mean, not
I don't know. I've never seen
she's
an episode.
She's a drug addict. Let's hope that your mom's not Nurse Jackie.
If the drug is my mom's love, then I think that's probably accurate.
Oh, but, look at that. Aww. He just got so sweet.
And so, you know, they hit it off. This is 1995. They had a lot of the same values, mm-hmm. same kind of, you know, lifestyle goals and hopes and dreams for what their family situation would be like. And like, let's be real, the lesbian dating pool in central Wisconsin in 1995, not huge.
Now
so,
I'm sure.
Yeah, they had a commitment ceremony in 96. And I say commitment ceremony, of course, because they didn't even, you know civil unions, let alone gay marriage. But friends and family, beautiful Unitarian Universalist Church in central Wisconsin, they walked down the aisle to the theme song of Star Trek Voyager.
Of course they did.
Yes. To boldly go where no man had gone before.
Oh, that's perfect.
Literally,
love them.
In their case. And
unless there was some experimental time in college that they haven't talked to you about.
Yeah,
but, you know.
Yeah,
I was
going
to say, cover your ears.
Well, see, this
Zach.
Is the thing. Is like, you know, people always say, oh, you know, gay parents. Like, we don't like to think about our parents' sexual orientation.
No,
that's disgusting.
No.
right. So,
my mother
anyway.
Was just trying to talk about sex with me the other day. I said, Mom,
why?
Stop. She said,
why would she do that?
You're 40 years old. You shouldn't be able to. No, Mom. Never.
No. Right.
Never. I'm plugging my ears.
Right.
I can't.
No. You know, so... anyway,
sorry,
No, it's all good. It's an occupational hazard.
So Nurse Jackie, she's all in. Like, your mom's got two kids. Like, you're walking into a family. And Nurse Jackie was just like, I'm in.
Yep. Well, we didn't have a dog yet, so we got a dog after that. And then family unit was, like, set.
And then you got an SUV. Wait, no, a Subaru.
Minivan.
Well, so no Subaru. That's actually, it's a joke I like to tell when I'm talking to college audiences, that my parents don't live in a gay house, or they don't drive gay cars. They don't even drive Subarus. and that tends to get a rise out of people.
Zach, in your book, you do talk about your mom's, your mom Terry's struggle. She had a little bit of a struggle finding a clinic to use.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Right? Mm-hmm. And then also she had something that struck me in your book was that the local paper wouldn't print the birth mm-hmm. announcement
mm-hmm. because they don't do illegitimate children.
Which
so they seriously they considered you illegitimate.
Yeah, yes. Because there was no father.
And this was what year?
Wow.
1991.
That is crazy. And then the whole struggle for her to find somebody to inseminate her.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't a doctor turn her
down?
Well,
so she tried to find a fertility clinic in the Midwest, couldn't find one that she could work with. And so it wasn't until she found one in San Francisco. And I think it might have actually literally been in the Castro District.
It's mm-hmm. where I'm from, San Francisco.
Yeah, so, but it was... You know, so it was a very different time. You know, she literally.
I mean, you weren't like the internet existed, but you weren't like doing Google searches in 91.
No. It was,
just
no,
for time and place, I was drunk in college in 1991, just so you know. Not at like Princeton.
Oh, Robin.
So I was fun though. Sorry.
No, my mom went to Drake. Drake University is in Des Moines, Iowa. She grew up on a family farm in Northeast Iowa. Always knew she was a little different growing up, and it wasn't until she got to college and, you know, began to understand that she was a lesbian woman and came out to her parents, I think, shortly after she finished at Drake. Hmm. So,
yeah, and you know a lot about both of your mom's struggles with coming out and being gay and with their families. Mm-hmm. And you talk very openly about mm-hmm. it, which in your book even, which I just love to hear. First of all, as a son knows so much about his mom's,
mm-hmm.
We both have sons. So mm-hmm. that's something.
I was like, I do. I forgot for a minute.
We have sons and daughters.
That's right.
So we
kind
of mirror your family. And I have the same donor for both my kids too. Mm-hmm. Which is, so it's just interesting to hear your take on that.
I mean, look, I have a very close relationship with both of my moms. I think, Terry and I have a little bit more in common temperamentally. We just do. Uh-huh. Yeah, we're very similar in a lot of ways. I'm very close with Jackie. There's no way to go through the struggles that we went through as a family, both with some of the kind of the bigger challenges growing up with same-sex parents in Iowa, but then also having specifically to deal with Terry's multiple sclerosis uh-huh. and everything that entailed. There's no way we could have gotten through that and not been close. Or, I mean, I guess we could have just like fallen apart, but I'm very glad that didn't happen.
So that's a perfect leeway right now to
segue.
Talk, to
Jamie.
Segue.
Oh. See, Jamie lost words when she had a baby.
I just had a baby 2 months ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. So I'm.
How's the baby doing?
He's great.
Good.
Yeah, he's
good.
Really great. My brain is not completely with us.
So yet. I'm here
although
to correct
I can't,
her when she does
Zach,
that.
I really can't promise that it was ever fully with us. So, you know, you're getting me in all my. Glory.
It's important to be honest about that.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's a great segue into where we want to go next with your childhood growing up mm-hmm. with two moms.
Yeah, some of the difficulties you mentioned that there were difficulties. What kind of stuff did you have to go through growing up?
I mean, a lot of it was simply just my mom Terry, God bless her, from before I could understand, was telling me stories about how I came to be, talking about like artificial insemination.
So like right out of the gate, she
literally,
was part
before
of your
I could understand, yeah. And
can I ask what exactly? Do you remember exactly how she explained it to
no,
you?
No, because I mean, I literally don't remember a time where I didn't know.
It was just part of the fabric of your.
You were conceived with artificial insemination, and
I don't there was never like a moment where like she sat me down and we talked about it. It was just like I always knew growing
uh-huh.
up.
Yep.
Uh-huh. However, there were also plenty of realizations that, we were different, that uh-huh. my family was different from other families. Some of those were because my family was being treated differently uh-huh. or because there were certain words that were being used in school that just didn't connect to my own experience. So there were a lot of different parts of it growing up. And one of the things that was, somewhat unrelated specifically to having same-sex parents was Terry's diagnosis with multiple sclerosis when I was 8 years old. Although they didn't tell me until I think I was 11 or 12, and that was a really seismic development in
sure.
our family's history.
Mm-hmm. So how did that affect the family in terms of like, now you have a dynamic where someone is sick and like, how did that change things? And all these things are happening at once. Like what was that like for you?
Well, one of the things that was, and it wasn't until I got a little detached from it that I could understand what had happened. So because Terry was sick, she was in a wheelchair
mm-hmm.
and that made them even more conspicuous.
Right.
And so they come to a football game and not only do you have two moms, they're the two moms and one parent is in a wheelchair.
Wow.
And that's just even more just like mm-hmm. sticking out like a sore thumb.
Different.
Absolutely. And it just kind of felt like one thing on top of another. And it's a great example of how, intersectionality works, right? You've got both somebody who is disabled and queer mm-hmm. and, we're living in, admittedly, a progressive college town. But
still, the middle America.
There are, I think, plenty of people who think, growing up in progressive Iowa City, I'm sure that was fine. And there were in some ways, absolutely. Mm-hmm. administrators had my back, and that was huge. Teachers in schools had my back. But kids are kids, And
yeah.
there were the words fag and gay were thrown around as slurs.
Did anyone ever come after you in that? Like, did they call you
absolutely.
A fag and like,
oh, yeah,
and
sure.
the bullying? And
for sure. No, it did change once I got bigger and taller.
Oh,
and,
yeah, because you're a giant.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So how did your parents handle, or how did you handle like the bullying or anything? Were you, like, was the house really communicative? Like, maybe you could walk us through like what happened, how it was handled, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, the opening chapter in the book is called mm-hmm. Be Prepared. And I talk about what it was like as a family, the conversations we had around the dinner table, because that was for us. Those were really important. Almost every single night growing up, K through 12, we had dinner at our dinner table. Mm-hmm. Very fortunate, very privileged in that respect that we
That's
were able
amazing.
To do that.
Mm-hmm.
And those conversations, we'd always start before the meal, have a conversation about that month's value. That would rotate.
You had
through.
Month values
from yep. this particular book. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Teaching Your Children Values.
I have to buy this book.
Richard and Linda Iyer.
Oh, I thought you meant, I was like, you did buy the book. It's right here.
No, a book he talks about. In
yeah.
this
and,
book.
And so basically they had 12 values, one for each month.
Mm-hmm.
And April would be about being trustworthy or mm-hmm. honesty. And May would be about being frugal or being thrifty.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would start each meal by giving an example either from our own lives or something that we had seen somebody else do of that value. And like often I would just like kind of skip through it on my way to whatever I was eating for dinner that night. But over time,
spend my quarter on dessert.
Yeah. Right. But over time, those sink
yeah.
in. Yeah. And so it would be around those dinner table conversations where we would talk about bullying, or my mom Terry would give us these strategies for, you know, how do you deal with the bully? And I think my mom called it fogging, which
yes,
is like you kind of either repeat this phrase over and over, you know, like, I feel sorry for you, back to the bully. And I'm lucky I never got my, like, punched out or anything. It certainly could have been much worse.
So you literally were in high school and you were like, I feel sorry for you.
This was elementary school. It changed a little bit going into junior high and then high school. You know, in junior high, the struggle was much more that, I mean, fag and gay were used mm-hmm. every morning on the bus right. going to school, every afternoon on the bus yep. back.
And did those words touch a nerve in you?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
They did, because when I was in high school, they didn't.
No, you know? So they definitely did for me. And part of it is, you know, you're on the bus, like, all the cool kids are the ones saying this mm-hmm. stuff. And like, I have to get off the bus and go have dinner with my gay parents.
Yeah. Right.
And
it's like I'm sure every time it was a moment of, am I standing up for them or do I want to fit in?
That's right. That's exactly right. Right.
And so how do we protect you from this? And then how did your moms protect you? And do you feel like they did a good job helping you through that?
Yeah, I mean, I do think they did about as good as you could do. And there was a very conscientious decision to move from central Wisconsin, where I was born, in this town called Marshfield, to Iowa City, which was a larger, more progressive community. And that was an intentional choice on their part. And I do think that they somewhat underestimated themselves. You know, I think they probably fell into the trap that many other people might, which is that, oh, it's a liberal progressive college town, like, it's not a
problem
here.
It'll be fine, right.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's like, we're in Brooklyn. Oh, it'll right. be fine, but it's right. still, well, they're still different.
You know, and it may be okay, but it, you know, look, it's not like you live in rural Iowa.
Yeah.
It's a different ballgame. But
sure.
it's not necessarily going to be a walk in the park either. And I think that there are, unfortunately, a lot of gay parents who just totally delude themselves into thinking
right.
that their kids will not face any problems. And it sounds like that's not the case for you guys, which I'm grateful
for.
But,
and their kids don't tell them, right?
Yeah.
You
yeah,
know,
of course.
You try to shield your parents from things, too. You don't
right.
want your parents
right.
to be hurt.
You don't
want to
talk
right.
to them.
Because of who they are.
right, but
you don't want to talk to them,
for sure.
too. There's that.
But I think parents need to be conscientious of the fact that mm-hmm. that will happen.
Yeah. Mm.
And, you know, you
I
have
mean,
to be.
My thing when I was thinking about having kids was always, whatever the thing is, you're too old, you're too big, you're too small, you're not attractive, you're attractive. Like, your kids are going to see the otherness in you.
Right.
And at some point in their growing up, it's going to be an issue.
Yep.
Like, I remember my dad taking me to the movies and I would sit 3 rows behind him because I was not sitting. And this
not
was our
seen in public.
Yeah. And this was the time when we were hanging out together because my parents were divorced, and he picked me up and then I would be like, great. And then go sit away.
Right.
Like, it's
wow.
like, that's ridiculous.
Right.
And if my kids did that, I'd be very upset.
Yeah, see, I don't think I ever did anything quite
I never
that
did.
Bad.
I always wanted to be right next to my mom, Robin.
Now, sometimes it would be tricky because Terry.
Clearly,
was,
I'm the turd here.
But because Terry was in a wheelchair, so she'd have to have a special spot in the movie theater yeah. or what have you.
No, that would have been super mean if you went and sat someplace.
God, seriously.
So if we transition a little bit into your viral video, which it seems like it has had a real impact on who you are today
mm-hmm.
since you're running for Senate. Can you talk to us about how did you get there? I mean, you're in college, you're doing college things, and all of a sudden you're in front of the House of Representatives. Like,
it was a beautiful speech, by the way.
It really was.
I mean,
it was
we don't
so
have to
eloquent.
Tell you that because I think you know that by now. But
have you heard this before? This is this new.
I appreciate it every time. So thank you.
Yes.
Such nice manners, Terry and Nurse Jackie, if you're listening. Such nice manners on this boy.
You know, I don't know if anyone's actually really given her the nickname Nurse Jackie before.
No.
It's overdue.
I mean, I'm going to
take
overdue.
Credit for that.
I mean,
no, it's good. It's good.
It's happening, I feel like, right now.
So the journey that led me to that speech really went back to 2009, which is the year that Iowa legalized same-sex marriage. Mm-hmm. We were the third state in the country to legalize same-sex marriage. And I was a senior in high school, and I was the columns editor for my high school newspaper. And so I wrote a column about how happy I was for this decision. And that column wound up running in the Des Moines Register, which is the state's largest
wow,
daily
that's
newspaper.
Incredible.
And what the reason that's important is because that was what put me on the radar mm-hmm. of some of the advocacy groups in the state. They read this column. And so then fast forward to 2011, after the Tea Party midterms, mm-hmm. Republicans have full control of the Iowa House. They decide that their top legislative priority is reversing the Supreme Court decision. The call goes out statewide for people to come to Des Moines to testify. I am on that list because of the column I wrote when I was in high school. And at the time, you know, I was a sophomore at the University of Iowa. I was studying civil and environmental engineering. Now, I had followed politics pretty closely for just being a young kid growing up. because I learned at a very early age that politics had a big impact on my family and on my own life. But I had decided that I just didn't think that politics was the arena where I wanted to make a difference or make my contribution. I wanted to be an engineer, work in environmental protection or the renewable energy industry. And so I was studying civil and environmental engineering at the University of Iowa.
Again, so similar to my path.
I don't think so.
Well,
I had seven majors. It's fine.
Well, so I mean, I bounced around before I made that decision. That was what I wanted to do. But anyway, regardless, the call goes out. I decide I have to go speak. Now, you will appreciate this. Hilariously, I was actually... I was scheduled to babysit for a lesbian couple in town that night. And, you know, when the call went out initially, it's like, oh, I'd love to, but I'm babysitting... So can I send like a written testimony instead?
Like my piece from the paper?
Or like, you know, like maybe I can, but like I'll have to find a replacement. So I let the couple know they found somebody.
My God. By the way, I just need to pause for 1 second. Never has a babysitter canceled on me and found their own replacement. I mean, it's like where they're
I didn't find the replacement. I said, hey, do you have somebody else you could find? Yeah, don't worry about it. Okay.
But you've had it together for a very long time.
I know, you're like Superman.
Once again,
we're going to go move in with your parents and hope
they did a good job. I mean, you had politics on your radar because it affected your family. Even if it affected my family, I don't think I would have had politics on my radar. So it's just a testament to you.
I mean, look, I will never forget how it felt. The 2004, I was in the eighth grade, and my very first homework assignment in the eighth grade was to watch the speeches of the Republican National Convention, which were happening. It was in September. It was late that year. And I will never forget what it felt like to watch right-wing politicians get up and in one breath talk about the dangers of terrorism and Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden and the war in Iraq. And in the next breath, talk about the dangers of families like mine.
Of your moms.
Of my moms,
And of it these lovely women.
Yeah, it was scary. I mean, it was incredibly isolating. I felt so powerless. Mm. And I didn't see, you know, the Democratic Convention had already happened. And so, like, I didn't see anyone standing up fighting back, you know? Mm-hmm. And there were, I mean, the Democratic Party in 2004 was like, gay marriage, baby. Yeah. I mean,
don't tell. Right. Let's get back to this.
Yeah, and so... It was, look, I'll never forget. And it was at that point where I realized, you know, politics had a big impact on my family and on me.
Yep.
Did you talk to your moms about that?
Yeah, no, I was watching it with them.
At the table over the 12 values.
Well, they only had one TV that you could watch, and it was in their bedroom. So, like, we're literally just like, I'm sitting on the bed watching the speeches, taking notes, you know, scribbling on a yellow legal pad, and just like, what are these people talking about? Yeah. Like, who are these families that are this threat to American values? Because it's clearly not us, you know. I'm a Boy Scout. Like, what do you want? So anyway.
I mean, you couldn't be more of a model citizen.
Well, I know. Little Zach. I just picture little Zach.
But still tall.
The next day in class, I didn't have the courage to speak up about it. I didn't have the courage to say why I was so upset about these speeches. And
did that affect in part why you wanted to go speak?
Absolutely.
To the Senate?
And because I knew that eighth grade me would have been terribly upset with college sophomore me if I hadn't gone and spoken up. So I knew I had to go.
All right, I have to interrupt you. Didn't you kind of like revise it in the car on your way?
Yeah, I was kind of practicing. And like, so if you look at, so I still have, I think in my, somewhere in my parents' house, the, I mean, so I do have notes, but I didn't look at them.
Mm. It was really clear that you knew what you were going to say.
Yeah.
It was for someone that age, you were so poised. You were so just eloquent. It was a fantastic speech.
I have speech and debate to thank for that.
Well,
you know, my mom was the debate champion.
Your mom was?
My mom was in high school. She talks about it to this day. She's in the paper. Anyway, go ahead, Zach.
I may or may not have won a state championship in debate when I was in high school.
Oh, I think you did.
Wait, we're going to need a picture of that for promotion.
So there's some people who do like single, like solo debate. I had a partner and she definitely carried the team.
My mom did too. Yeah. She had a partner. Yeah. I'm sorry.
She with your mother.
So I was revising it in the car and I was figuring out, okay, it's kind of working through in my head as I'm driving, you know, what I wanted to say, but it's a whole nother ball game to actually get there. I mean, my heart
your
was
nerves
racing.
Had to be off the charts.
If you watch the video, I put my hands in my pockets because they're shaking.
But it's a move, though. The pocket move makes you look like a distinguished gentleman. Yeah. It's a very
smart move.
You know,
I mean, because you don't want the hands where you put them out and they go like this.
Yeah, right, right. For those of you who are listening, hands literally shaking right now. And
I hope there's lots listening, by the way.
I hope so, too. I mean, look, it was an incredible moment. I mean, that room, the House chamber, was full of activists, of lawmakers. There were people from the press.
There's a lady behind you nodding during the whole thing.
That woman is actually now running for the state Senate. She just announced she's running in a totally different district.
She was nodding
And at the end she turns to somebody else and goes, oh wow.
It gets you. Your speech gets you.
It's now at 17 million views.
I mean, so the funny thing is that the Iowa House Democrats, that video was recorded by an intern for the Iowa House Democrats with a flip cam and then uploaded to YouTube. Once it was uploaded to YouTube, one way that you can make money on YouTube is by downloading popular videos and then re-uploading them to your own, basically, and then you get ad revenue. And the hilarious part is that when it went viral the second time, there's no one to enforce it. When it went viral, it went viral initially in February 2011 from the Iowa House Democrats. Then some random person copied it, uploaded it, but then just like deactivated their account or just like was like stopped using their account. So we reached out to this person, never heard anything back. Then when it went viral a second time later that year, when Move On, the liberal online advocacy group, pushed it out to their entire email list. And it's funny, that group for Move On then spun off and became Upworthy.
Oh, interesting.
I was the perfect concept for Upworthy, it turns out.
That's a nice fact.
Yeah,
I enjoy Upworthy.
I don't even know what they're doing. Anyway, but when they made it go viral the second time, it was with one of those copies.
Mm-hmm.
So that one got now, I think, 20-some million views. The original's up to 3.5. But then it also, Facebook video changed the game again.
Sure.
Because now it's gone viral several times on Facebook with like the native video player. And I think Ashton Kutcher shared it over this most recent summer in June, and it got like 150 million plays.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And you had idea when you said this speech that it was going to turn into this.
Well, the funny part is that I could see the press, and like there were, I think, a few TV cameras. I don't remember clearly, but I think there were. I did not see the intern with the flip cam.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Because nobody notices the interns, let's be honest. Yeah. Unless it's lunchtime, and then we're like, you, over here.
and
are we putting in the seamless or what?
Well, you know, and the funny part is, like, I don't even think she might have uploaded another speech or two, but mine was the only one that took
had
off.
A big, yeah.
Well, so it must have changed. I mean, I'm just making an assumption here, but it must have changed the course of, I mean, you're running for Senate now. It had to have changed the course of your future.
Well, you just said 10 minutes ago that you never really wanted to have a career in politics.
Well, I did not think that the way I would make my contribution would be in the political realm, in part because I had seen, you know, President Obama had been elected in 2008, and that was the first campaign I ever knocked on a door for.
Mm-hmm.
And then the issue that I cared the most about, which was climate change, just stalled. Democrats had full control of the presidency, of the House, the Senate, and they weren't able to get a cap and trade bill through. And I was just like, well, what are we doing? Yeah. I mean, you know.
Exactly.
And so I just kind of, you know, I still followed politics, but the idea, like, I just didn't see any value in actually being a part of the political process in that way.
Because nothing was happening.
So, you know, I was going to be an engineer and, like, just go do the work of making change in the field. And then when this happened, I mean, I had a choice to make, which was, do I like respond to all of these interview requests and phone calls and emails, or do I say, look, I've said what I have to say. I'm going to go back to my engineering course of study and go do that. It took some time for me to make up that choice, and I eventually decided, you know, I feel like eighth grade me, you know, again, would be very disappointed if I didn't keep speaking out and keep, you know, doing this advocacy work. So I decided to lean into it and to go do it.
Well, so I have a question for you. So we're starting to talk a little bit about your campaign now that you're running for Senate. And I have a quote from this man, Cortland Sykes, who's a Republican Senate candidate in Missouri. And he said about his daughters, he said, I don't want them to grow up into career-obsessed banshees who forego home life and children and the happiness of family to become nail-biting, man-phobic, hell-bent feminist she-devils.
Sounds like a fun guy.
Does he sound like, he sounds like such a good dude.
I feel like I've heard about this guy.
Courtland Sykes. And
he's running for the U.S. Senate?
Yeah, in
Claire
Missouri.
McCaskill? Yeah.
I don't have that level of detail.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm me. But my question is, you know, I feel like he's representative in this Make America Great time that we're living in. Like, that dude now has a voice, and he can say that and have a career, whereas a few years back, you had to be kind of hidden about those things. What are your concerns about yourself in this
climate? These people have always
been
there, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, Todd
Aiken.
But
they didn't say it out loud.
Well, in Missouri, Todd Aiken, you know, the legitimate rape body shut it down. Uh-huh. I mean, you know, and then he lost, right? I mean, he said some crazy stuff, and he paid the price electorally.
But I mean, Roy Moore almost won.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely.
That's
the climate. And the Roy Moore thing, I'm glad you bring that up, because that is a terrific example of the real danger of the Trump administration, the Trump presidency, and the Republican complicity in what is happening. Because if you looked at the polling before that special election in Alabama, something like 78% of Republicans thought that the allegations against Roy Moore were fabricated by the press.
Mm. Yep.
And the reason they thought that was because they were told that by conservative right-wing media. And the Republican Party, who
stood behind him.
They have been silent. And they haven't been silent. They have encouraged Republican attacks by Trump and people around him against the press. Democracy is such a fragile thing.
It is.
You know, it is supported these guardrails. We talk about these norms of our institutions protecting the press. I mean, it's so, so important.
And so we're teetering a little right now.
We are absolutely teetering right
now. So that brings me back to my question about the gays. So do you think that all those people who have been given a voice now by the Trump administration, by the side, do you think that they may have an issue voting for a guy who comes from a gay and lesbian house? Are you concerned or not concerned?
Well, look, I mean, Courtland Sykes is not going to vote for me. I'm not trying to win Courtland Sykes over. I'm not.
I have a feeling you wouldn't be.
Now, there are a lot of people who I do think voted for Donald Trump or who voted for, you know, Mitt Romney or John McCain, not just because, you know, they're like people who hate women or hate LGBT people or, you know, I think that there are some deeply held ideological differences in terms of responsibility. In Trump's case, there's a significant amount of racism, but I don't think that those things explain everything. When I think about my campaign and the people who I'm trying to engage, look, we can't leave people behind. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go out there and throw women or people of color or LGBTQ people under the bus. I also am going to be talking with and reaching out to people who didn't vote for Democrats in 2016, because if we are not able to engage these, I mean, frankly, a lot of them feel left behind too, you know, and we can have a debate. And I think there is a real debate to be had as to what extent like that's actually true or whether that's part of the right wing
kind of medium.
Yeah, right. But that the whether or not it's true is like, that's how they feel, you know, and especially on the left, we spend a lot of time talking about experience, and that is their experience. And so I think if you pretend it's not there, the reality is that in a democracy, we each get one vote. You know, and so, and the point is also not just to represent the people who voted for you.
Yeah,
there's some people who approach politics that way, and that's not how I think about it. I think if you're going to do it, you have to represent everybody who voted for you, or everybody who you represent, not just people who voted for you. Mm-hmm. So,
how do you think your childhood prepared you for your Senate run? I mean, I could take it back to that table.
I think those values are super important. And look, I'll be really clear. I don't live up to those values every single day. No one ever does.
Everybody slips up sometimes.
And
I actually don't believe that about you.
it's definitely true. I am, but you know, it is in a really important compass. You know, you might not always follow the compass, but it's always pointing in the right direction, and that's really important. Mm-hmm. You know, there are certainly having a parent in a wheelchair when you're 11 years old. You know, knowing what it feels like to get dirty looks or just be straight up ignored, frankly, that was the frustrating part. So often was just that people would pretend like my mom in the wheelchair just wasn't there
because it was too uncomfortable.
You know, and
humanity, we go back to that a lot, where it is, where people
well, your moms must be very proud of you.
They are.
I mean, I want I hope my son grows up to be like you.
no pressure.
Yeah. All right. So before you leave us, we do want to give a listener question.
Okay.
We have Grace from Northampton.
Hi, Grace.
Hi, Grace.
Grace loves you. She's a fan. What she would like to know is, what is your experience of not having a dad?
Good question. You know, and I like that question because I like to differentiate between dad and father. You know, there's a reason why, and spoiler alert to anyone who hasn't seen The Empire Strikes Back, but there's a reason why Luke doesn't say, or Darth Vader doesn't say to Luke, you know, Luke, I am your dad, right? I mean, that sounds ridiculous. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dad, in my mind, is much more that emotional relationship with the male parent. And father is a biological connection. So, you know, it's hard, you know, I don't have a control group, you know, I don't have like something to which I can immediately compare my own life. So it's kind of hard to talk about my experience in a way where, you know, like, well, okay, you know, so I, yeah, it's a good question. Look, I'll say this. I had great
Grace
male,
is stumping you.
I had great male role models in my life. And that was it. My parents worked to do that. They found, you know, good men, you know, whether it's uncles or male role models at church or in the Boy Scouts. I mean, that was one reason why they were willing to keep me enrolled in the Boy Scouts, even though they had that policy that officially, you know, did not allow them to participate, even though it was never an actual issue because local, it's a local program. But, and so there was no shortage of positive male role models. You know, my best friend, one of my best friend's dads growing up taught me how to shave, you know, and, you know, so like I don't really feel like I mean, look, I'm
you didn't miss it.
No, I mean, like, well, you can't miss something you don't have, you know,
right?
Like, I miss owning a Jaguar, you know, like okay, so
you know, you said something great in the book that I loved on this subject. You said your uncle taught you how to shave, or who was it?
One of my best friend's dads.
One of your best friend's dads taught you how to shave. And that was fine, and your moms couldn't do that.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
also
yeah.
Your sister.
Oh yeah, she couldn't. Yeah, right? they couldn't teach her how to use makeup. That's right.
And she learned it somewhere else. Yeah, and that was fine too.
Right. Yeah. Which, you know, and look, at the end of the day, there are still men in my life who I talk about, you know, various things. Just like there's some things I talk about with my moms. Like, you know, there are, when we say it takes a village, like this is what we're talking about, you know?
It does take a village.
Yeah. I mean, it was, my experience was good because I had two loving, committed parents who cared about me. There are plenty of shitty dads out there.
Sure.
You know?
And or so, like, or parents were like families where the dad takes off.
Right.
Like, you know, there's lots.
Yep. Did you ever ask your moms about dad or no? Because...
Yeah, for sure. No, I mean, there were questions like, well, why is my family different? Like, why do they have dads and I don't, you know? I definitely had, and like, I, at one point, you know, in probably like the first or second grade for elementary school, it's like, like the school year ran into Father's Day. So like we made Father's Day cards, but like, you know, so like, but I made one. It's like, hey dad, like looking forward to meeting you. You can come live with us. Love, Zach. You know, and I don't know how my moms reacted when they saw that, but they probably weren't thrilled. But I will say this, they were also very straightforward with me about the donor, and, you know, they were willing to share. There was, like, a recording with him that the cryobank did on, like, a CD. I think that's pretty normal.
Yep.
He had filled out, like, a questionnaire. I could read that. So, you know, there were plenty of...
And from the start, it was always just out there.
Yeah, there's no secrets, you know? It was just, this is... My mom had a name for him, even though we have a donor number, but that's it. And, you know, but it was.
She had a name for him that she had made.
Yeah,
Star Trek name, like 7 of 9?
It was Wolfgang, because that was the name that she had threatened to name me when she was talking about her pregnancy with my grandparents. And
Zach, we have a lot in common. I was going to be Obi-Wan.
I don't know which would be a harder name to have, Obi-Wan or Wolfgang.
I feel like a certain dude in high school could pull off Wolfgang.
Yeah, I'm not that
but
guy.
But I don't
think
anyone can pull off Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah, that's true.
Like just
that's
almost
true.
Nobody.
I don't know why.
True.
I don't know why.
Like maybe like Johnny Depp, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Just like outside smoking, be like, I'm Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah.
Well, I just want to say this was absolutely wonderful having you here.
Yeah, no, thank you guys.
I wish I lived in Iowa so I could come vote for you.
Yeah.
Because I would.
Well, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll take a mail-in ballot.
If your listeners want to learn more, they can just visit our website. If you just go to zachwahls.com, ZACHWAHLS, that'll redirect you to our campaign website. I'm also on Twitter at Zach Walls and Facebook, Tim Deal.
He's everywhere, guys, on the social media. You should check him out.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. And read his book, even though he wrote it a long time ago. It's very well written.
Well,
and
I appreciate that.
I feel like won't say this, but I'll say this. If I say vote for Zach.
Vote for Zach.
Right?
I'll say it too. He's also very handsome.
And tall. Oh, did we mention he's tall and handsome? It's like suddenly it's a straight podcast.
Yeah.
Suddenly we're all like, hi, Zach. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much, Zach.
Thanks, guys.
Wow.
Oh my God, I love Zach Walls.
We just interviewed Zach Walls, Robin.
I'm so impressed by us.
I am too.
But I'm more impressed by him, unfortunately.
He's amazing.
I hope our kids turn out as good as Zach Walls.
I was thinking that the whole time. What a well-versed young man.
I also want to meet Nurse Jackie now and Terry and Mom Terry. Well, I'd love to hear everybody's thoughts on Zach, on his childhood and his upbringing and his Senate run. So share any of your thoughts on our social media. We're on If These Ovaries Could Talk on Facebook, and we're on Ovaries Talk on
Twitter.
Where are we on Instagram, Jamie?
It's Ovaries
underscore
talk.
Because somebody took Ovaries Talk.
Yeah.
We're mad at you, lady.
Yeah, it might have been me on accident.
Probably was, let's be honest. Well, this was just such a great episode. We want to leave you with some bonus content of Zach. Jamie asked him about the speech, and he recited.
He just went right into it, verbatim.
From memory.
The whole speech.
And as our mouths, you know, went agape, he said, well, you know, it's been played back at me a lot. I was like, my entire life's been played back at me and I can't remember it. Like, no. That's unbelievable.
And he did it with the pauses that you need to take. I mean, it was
dramatic.
Beautiful. I teared up. So, and I think you might too. So we're going to leave you with that.
So we're going to leave you with that. And we're going to say on our way out, eggs, ovaries out, baby. No, I did that.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman. My name is Zach Walls. I'm a sixth-generation Iowan, an engineering student at the University of Iowa, and I was raised by two women. When my biological mom, Terry, told her parents that she was pregnant, that the artificial insemination had worked, they wouldn't even acknowledge it. It actually wasn't until I was born and they succumbed to my infantile cuteness that they broke down and told her that they were thrilled to have another grandson. Unfortunately, neither of them lived to see her marry her partner, Jackie, of 15 years when they wed in 2009. My younger sister and only sibling was born in 1994. We actually have the same donors that were full siblings, which is really cool for me, you know, and I guess the point is that our family really isn't so different from any other Iowa family. When I'm home, we go to church together, we eat dinner, we go on vacations, but we've had our hard times too. We get in fights, and actually my mom, Terry, was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 2000. It's a devastating disease that put her in a wheelchair, so we've had our struggles, but you know, we're Iowans. We don't expect anyone
Even
to
with
solve.
The pregnant pause.
I know, right? We don't expect anyone to solve our problems for us. We'll fight our own battles. We just hope for equal and fair treatment from our government. As a student at the University of Iowa, the topic of same-sex marriage comes up frequently in classroom discussions, and the question always comes down to, well, can gays even have kids? And the conversation gets quiet for a moment because most people don't really have an answer. Then I'll raise my hand and say, actually, I was raised by a gay couple and I'm doing pretty well. I scored in the 99th percentile on the ACT. I'm an Eagle Scout. I own and operate my own small business. If I was your son, Mr. Chairman, I believe it'd make you very proud. I'm not really so different from any of your children. My family really isn't so different from yours. After all, your family doesn't derive its sense of worth from being told by the state, you're married, congratulations. Mm-hmm. No, the sense of family comes from the commitment that we make to each other to work through the hard times so we can enjoy the good ones. It comes from the love that binds us. That's what makes a family. So what you're voting on here today isn't to change us. It's not to change our families. It's to change how the law views us and how the law treats us. You are voting for the first time in the history of our state to codify discrimination into our Constitution, a Constitution that, but for the proposed amendment, is the least amended Constitution in the United States of America. You are telling Iowans that some among you are second-class citizens who do not have the right to marry the person you love. So will this vote affect my family? Will it affect yours? Over the next few hours, I'm sure we're going to hear plenty of testimony about how damaging having gay parents is on kids, but in my 19 years, not once have I ever been confronted by an individual who realized independently that I was raised by a gay couple. And you know why? Because the sexual orientation of my parents has had zero effect on the content of my character. Thank you very much.